Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Well, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from somewhere off Korea's Halloween Hangover Peninsula, you're listening to episode 82 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Abducted in the French Quarter is the recently published work of this week's guests, New Orleans-based husband, wife, and author duo, Chad and Alta Dillard. Over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we'll explore any number of their best-known bizarre X-Files-type adventures and stories. From ghosts and UFOs to tales of shapeshifters and a whole lot of other seriously spooky stuff, we'll be heading out this week on a whirlwind trip into the shadowy world of America's paranormal and unexplained. Traveling from New Orleans to New Mexico, Louisiana to Alabama, prepare yourself for an epic journey into the hidden realms of high strangeness and the dark unknown. A little bit of the dark unknown is indeed what we hope to be exploring here today. Episode 82 of Pirate Radio Podcasts, Abducted in the French Quarter. And unless they themselves have been abducted once again, we're hoping that we have the this week's guests, co-authors Chad and Alta Dillard, standing by at the ready. Are you there, folks?
Yes, we're here. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, we are here.
Ahoy.
Ahoy.
So, well, we got a lot to talk about today. There's no doubt about that. Hoping that things are going to work out here from a technical standpoint. Any number of issues can pop up from time to time. Sometimes the stream goes out loud and clear and we've got no issues whatsoever. Other times it's a real pain in the neck with all kinds of interference and any other possible problem you can imagine. So got our fingers crossed here, though. Maybe a little bit of hoodoo or voodoo, some kind of I'm not sure, luck from the French Quarter. You're based out of New Orleans at the moment as well, too, correct? You've been there for a while now. You've traveled all over the country, of course, according to your bio here. So, and we are going to try to trace that and sort of backtrack your story here and over the course of the past, 20, 25 years is what it sounds like. So just to get a clear sense of your backstory, but currently New Orleans residents, correct?
Yeah, we're about 15 minutes out of the French Quarter. We've been back here for about a year and a half now.
And one thing just before we get going, because I was aware of this, just a quick mention and tip of the pirate hat to the former late great Mr. Fats Domino. He survived Hurricane Katrina. He managed, there's quite a story there, I guess, where he, I'm not sure, maybe the two of you are up to speed on that, but it was quite an ordeal with him having to scramble to safety back in, I guess it was 2005. So thank God he made it out of that and was able to, I'm assuming, happily live out the rest of his life, the 12 years that transpired from that time. So are you either Fats Domino fans or, you know, I mean, he was a major fixture and well-known personality, of course, for many years, based out of the New Orleans area. Anything that you can share with us that our listeners might be interested in knowing about?
In my case, I happen to be 10 years older than Chad, so I'm born in the 50s. That makes me 60 at this stage, and my mother raised me with a lot of his music and a lot of the music such as, and Chad, even though as young as he is quite a blues aficionado, and, you know, so we're both very interested in the loss, if you will. He lived a grand life, and from what we understand, very humble, unbelievably humble for the kind of celebrity, you know, he had achieved in his life. So, I mean, lots and lots of folks just showed up here recently to honor his death. And, you know, it's quite a testimony to, I believe he was 89 years old. Certainly, again, the fact of Katrina, Chad and I left New Orleans in 2001, and of course, Katrina in 2005. We've only returned this last year, so we've been gone for 15 years, kind of playing catch-up, if you will. But, right, you know, what an amazing life.
The classic walking to New Orleans, quite a signature tune there. I'm assuming he wrote it. He may not have, but then everyone, of course, probably knows him even better for Blueberry Hill.
Right.
As a kid growing up, I'm a little younger than Alta here, so, you know.
Everyone is.
Born in 69, but I was a kid growing up watching Happy Days, and I think, I'm not sure, they featured that song there a time or two, or they had somebody singing, you know, I found my thrill.
I think Richie did all the time or something like that. Richie, when he had a date or something, when the date went well or something.
He scored. Yeah. He got lucky. All right. Good way to go, Richie. Yeah. So, all right. Well, you know, we've got a lot to talk about here, clearly, a lot of ground to cover. And if we've got anyone there, we've got a few people that have joined us at this point, usually numbers sometimes have had as many as 30 people, believe it or not, streaming and kind of just, well, joining us live as we produce our weekly show. So it varies really, but you can expect there will be a few questions. People in the YouTube chat area who will be wanting to know a little bit more as far as your story is concerned and the details regarding different incidents and things that I guess that you claim have occurred and happened, all the strangeness and weirdness. I guess it's what Alta likes to refer to as high strangeness. So, it's been with you for quite some time, I guess, to Alta. But the best place then is just a quick introduction and, you know, sort of backstory on how the two of you met, of course, but even before that, a little bit about your personal lives. I know Chad, your father was, maybe if he's still alive, a locomotive, is the word aficionado? He had big time, huge interest in locomotives. There's a few pictures we're sharing actually with people in the streaming slideshow that we have going out over YouTube at the moment of you in one of the locomotives. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about briefly your life as a kid growing up and to the point where you actually met Alta, and then maybe she can jump in and do the same, because I know she's got a lot to share there on that front as well.
Yeah, definitely. My dad, when I was young, up until about like 7 years old, my dad was a rice farmer, you know, there in the Delta of Arkansas, and kind of a wholesome life. Later on in life, he got into the diesel engine business. Mainly it was marine. This was when the oil fields and everything were going great down in Houston area. And then this last probably 30 years or so, he's been rebuilding and dismantling locomotives, and we did a real big project there in Stone Mountain Park in Georgia. And that was quite a time. We were there close to 2 years, and actually the building where the locomotives, now it's the locomotive shop, it was the old prison there in Stone Mountain, and it was very active. It was crazy. It was fun. I always wanted to be a chef, you know, when I was younger, worked in the restaurant business, and then after I left New Orleans and went to Alabama, started working with my dad, and we were doing the locomotives, and it was quite interesting, so.
Okay, and I'm not sure if you want to talk about, maybe we could leave that to Alta to kind of lay out for our listeners, but how the two of you met. Maybe, Alta, you come in a little bit with your backstory, and then you can bring us up to speed as to how the two of you managed to cross paths.
Right. So, as I mentioned, I'm born in the late 50s, mixed Native blood from the territories of Arizona. You know, just again, for the sake of conversation, I have a very, what I consider a very strange background, a mysterious past without a lot of answers. My mother claims to have left my father and all of his people in Arizona when I'm about 6 months old. I'm an only child. She disappears essentially with me. And again, as I said, there's a lot of mystery in the past. She raised me all over the country for the first early years of my life. You know, just to start this kind of conversation off in the term of high strangeness, that's a term that I borrowed many years ago because it seems to apply to me the best. I haven't found a better term so far besides just crazy weird. But the high strangeness, essentially, if you will, for me begins at about the age of 9. We're living, my mother and I, and at that time I had a stepfather, we're living in Colorado, in Aurora, Colorado. And my first memory is essentially being tested for what the term ESP. I'm being tested for ESP in a military hospital. That hospital is called Fitzsimmons Hospital. I've done a lot of research in the last several years, just trying to, as I've always mentioned to anybody that would hear us, just trying to find others who are experiencers or having lots of mystery in their life. Also, you know, if there are answers, trying to find those. But anyhow, Fitzsimmons Hospital, I discovered only in, I believe in this last year, stopped essentially being in that location. It's still noted as Fitzsimmons Hospital, but I believe they've moved that facility to another location. I believe it's still in Colorado, maybe Colorado Springs, something like that. So anyhow, that's my first memory. And then it kind of goes blank for me again from the ages of about 9 until we leave that area in Colorado and we end up in the Midwest. And I live for 10, 11 years of my life up until about my second year of college, which would have been in the late 70s, in a fairly classic Midwest life, a good life, if you will, in the sense of cornfields and city and ice skating and, you know, out on ponds and just, you know, again, very classic kind of comfortable existence. I had experiences with what I use the terms ghosties. I use a lot of kind of, I guess others might think baby language, what have you, just sort of take the chill out of so much of this craziness. So anyhow, when I'm young, I seem to have a lot of connection with my term, the ghosties, and paranormal kinds of in that regards. Others have called it poltergeist. I'm not sure. I don't really have answers, just, you know, expressing what I remember. But I also will mention before we go any further as well, and I'll speak on Chad's behalf in this regard, neither one of us ever seemed to have any interest in space out there. ETs, aliens, all this common language was nothing I ever had an interest in, ever. UFOs, not even cared really much about sci-fi in the sense of, you know, movies or television. I'm raised mixed Native. I've had my regalia all my life. And, you know, even though I'm raised without the tribe, I'm raised around the country with my mom, traveled in different places in the world. that was enough for me. That lore and that those some of those customs, that was always enough for me. I'd always heard about what people call Bigfoot. I always called Sasquatchy. I've always heard of shape-shifting, all this kind of language, heard about throughout my life, and I never really gave it a second thought. I wasn't not believing, just accepted that that's the lore. But again, when it comes to space, ETs, aliens, and all this other stuff, never had any interest at all until things started happening to Chad and I. And I would say that would bring us to 1990. Now, if you're interested, Chad has a very brief example of what I call high strangeness in his very early life, as he mentioned, you know, around 7.
Yeah, there was like these, like I said, my dad was a rice farmer and a farmer, and we had soybeans out beside our house between the house and the shop where we kept all the tractors, or where they kept all the tractors and everything. And I remember, you know, my grandfather and my uncle and my dad talking about these three burnt circles. And I've seen them myself. I mean, they were right out beside the house. But they were these three huge, you know, 12, 15-foot round burnt circles, just three of them right in a row, you know, side by side. And just how puzzled, you know, my uncle and dad and grandfather were about what made them, how did this happen, you know, I'd never seen anything like it. Now, that was very bizarre. And then, you know, we had some crazy stuff happen around, like, my dad's house, you know, things moving around the house and furniture being rearranged. So that was some bizarre stuff as a child. But again, yeah, I was never into, you know, I mean, besides Star Trek and Star Wars, but, you know, that was fantasy, not reality.
Crop circles and poltergeist activity, those two, you hear a lot about that, you know, for people that look into these things. For some reason, they go hand in hand. The reports of alien ET encounters and incidents of that sort, and then poltergeist activity. Strange how that seems to work also with the UFOs and Bigfoot for some reason. There's multiple reports of that. So a lot of people have speculated, and even, you know, speaking of Star Trek and Star Wars, George Lucas, I guess, the decision maker there, why did he choose Chewbacca? You know, this.
Right.
What does Chewbacca look like, and what's he doing out there in space with the rest of the gang? You know, the rebel scum, as it were. So, yes. So the two of you met, I guess, on a blind date that kind of went awry, or seemed from the outset, I guess, to be not really working out too well. And then suddenly Chad popped up out of the blue. Is that right, Alta?
Exactly. It was 1990, happened to be on Valentine's Day. The short story is I was 33 at the time, never had been married, no kids, single as in very single. In kind of a really poor place in my life as far as emotionally and really questioning a whole lot about the direction I was headed in and kind of lost. I felt lost at this period of time. It ends up where I've got a new job. I hate this job. So, of course, nothing's working right. He's a new father. You know, seems to be very happily married, new baby. He can't stand the fact that I'm single without a date. I didn't asked for help, but he took it upon himself to call somebody to arrange a blind date for me. So I'll add to that, I had never been on one of those before either, nor did I think I ever was interested in that. He makes the phone call anyhow. I happen to be standing there. He's describing me. As I'm listening to the way I'm being described, I'm kind of thinking, as I've said before, I'd be interested in me too, because he's describing me pretty cool. And the guy he's talking to seems very interested, but he can't make the date because he has to work that night. He's in the restaurant business. So not helping the mood much. It's like I don't want a blind date, but I can't get a blind date. So that's how I leave work at around 5 o'clock that evening. I decide to do something extremely out of character. So everything that I described to you is very out of character for me, such as I'm very social, and I don't remember ever doing that before. Certainly no saint, but somebody who's, I'm very tribal. I like hanging with folks that I like to hang with. Well, not on this night. I decide I'm going to do this on my own. The whole evening is extremely bizarre, with some missing time in the midst of it. But ultimately, before midnight on Valentine's Day, I'm sitting in a huge sports bar, kind of in the middle of the city. And the city at the time, the population is, I believe, close to like 300,000. So, I mean, it's not New York City, but it's not a farm town. And the fact that I've chosen this huge sports bar that I have never been to before is odd. But as it goes, before midnight, as I said, all of a sudden this guy walks up to me. I'm sitting by myself up at the bar, and he asked me if I wanted to play pinball. That's something I've always hated. And for some reason, you know, I decide to give in and go play pinball. And in the midst of this crazy game that I hate, we discover, you know, that it's Chad and Alta, the blind date that didn't happen that seemed to happen. Chad's who David had called that afternoon. And again, the story gets even stranger as far as I'm concerned, because Chad had never been to this location before either. And, you know, just to move that story along, a lot of details in the middle of that, but we discover within 24 hours of this that Chad's grandfather, who had passed on by the time I had met Chad, his real name and my name are identical. His first name is Alta, my name is Alta, and his last name is Duncan, and that happens to be my mother's name. And I'm told I'm mixed Indian from Arizona. Never have heard of any Arkansas people in my bloodline or in my history. This happens to be Little Rock, Arkansas. And come to find out, you know, there's no native in Chad's family. So that's a very big mystery still to this day to me about this man and I sharing the same identical name. That just adds again to, again, because I have a lot of mystery in my past. And so that was essentially our beginning.
A lot of
there's no doubt to me. I'm sorry, I was just going to finish that saying. I have always used the word, and it's always been my doing. Chad doesn't do this, but I've always said that I'm positive we've been arranged.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of synchronicity there for sure is what it seems. A lot of, you look to, I think the word is hermetics, if I've got that straight. I'm always... You think by now I would have got to the bottom of that. I confuse the word hermetics with hermeneutics, which I guess has more to do with Bible study. There could be a connection there possibly too. But yeah, you look to the stars, you look to the sky, you listen to the wind, language of the birds. I'm not sure if the two of you are familiar with that term or not, but just things kind of come together. Numbers, colors, just strange happenings and synchronicities for sure. It's important, I think, for all of us to pay attention to them and not just discard them out of hand as mere, you know, coincidence theories. Before we go any further, I think we should maybe check up there in the crow's nest, and we're going to see just if we can patch a line on through to him or not and get a hold of James West. He has dropped
Ahoy.
Here. Oh, you're up there, are you? How do things look from your vantage point up there today?
It looks great. Great skies, clear skies. Everything's nice and no stormy weather, Ed. Clear sailing from here out.
No sign of the Kraken or any enemy ships?
Nope. Just looking out for orbs tonight.
Yeah, any booty or plunder in the crosshairs? Nothing... I guess with our guests are our booty and plunder, perhaps intellectual and literary, you know, sort of loot or what have you. But which is always the best, right. Of course, too. Just yes, these wonderful, you know, stories that people have to share. So go ahead, James.
So it's nice to meet you, Chad. It's nice to meet you as well. Man, I already forgot your name.
Alta.
What's your
name?
Alta. Alta.
altitude.
Right. Right.
That's right. Hi, James. Nice to meet you also.
Nice to meet both of you. I am also, for lack of an introduction or anything, because it was last second, I'm like, hey, Jeffy, I want to join with you tonight. He's like, okay, come on. I am also an experiencer as well, so I understand where you're coming from with these types of stories. And you said you're from the New Orleans area, or at least you're living there currently. Are you familiar with, what is it called, ICAR or Joe Montalvo?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Like, have you actually gone out and experienced some of the experience he talks about on his show?
You know, I made contact, or I tried to make contact with him years ago when we were living away from here, because we've only returned this last year after being gone for 15 years. Again, I'm the researcher of the family and the one that reaches out. And I believe him and I spoke to each other for like a moment. It seems like he was on a break in between his show. And I don't know. It didn't seem to be catching. He didn't seem to have an interest. And I found that very bizarre. So we've not really tried since.
The only reason I bring up that is because his show, what was it called? Like, I have it here. It was called UFO Undercover. That was the first UFO-related show I've ever heard back in the day when that first came out. So it was just interesting to me that it was from New Orleans, and you said you've been in and out of New Orleans for the past, what you said, 15 years or more?
We originally moved here in 1995, and we lived until about 1998, left, returned in 2000, left again in 2001, and have just returned in 2016. So, you know, it's been kind of a jump back and forth, back and forth. I'd like to mention, since you brought him up and you are familiar with him, I used to listen to his shows all the time, again, really studying it and just trying to gain as much information as I could. Did you ever hear, did you happen to remember or ever catch a gentleman that he had on a couple of times, I believe, this has been several years ago, who claims that he was a New Orleans cop during Katrina? Who was having...
the one that was in the flooded mall?
Exactly.
Was that the one?
With
I'm familiar with those stories.
And so on. Right, you know, and of course I know, I understood he left, supposedly went to Chicago, wherever, and kind of that's been that, but I tried very hard to have further understanding of, because that's the only other case that I've discovered, that I've been able to discover or find, that somebody, whether true or not, went public. Most people, I haven't found anybody who has been willing to go public with their names about their experiences.
Right, it's a definitely an interesting story, to say the least. And,
to say the least.
Yeah, it's
right.
Yeah, I've never heard a story quite to that level. Even though I've had my own experiences on a similar level with similar type of beings, I've never quite heard one to that level. But you never know what you're going to get with a caller, or if someone is being 100% honest, or if someone is actually out there for malintent.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the world of ufology, I've heard it from a few people, folks that have spent a number of years, insiders of sorts, and, you know, researchers and people with all kinds of contacts. George Knapp really made an interesting statement. He's maybe repeated this on several occasions. I only heard it once, though. But, and he's covered out in Las Vegas there, the crime beat, for quite a few years, and had all kinds of dealings and contact with the underworld figures and so forth. And as dangerous as that may be, he claimed that the world of ufology is even more cloak and dagger and filled with, you know, just endless, the deception and disinformation and, all kinds of mind games that go on, to the point where even sometimes people really, they do lose their lives, not because of natural causes, let's say.
Right.
So,
right.
But let's just carry on now, if we could. James, we shared your link there in the chat area. It's the East Texas UFO channel, of course, via YouTube. You've got two projects on the go, as our listeners, people that tune in to Pi Radio podcasts on a regular basis, will likely be aware. We've had James join us as a co-host and feature guest on a couple of occasions now. So, but yeah, Tyranny Unmasked is more the kind of a political sort of channel and themed project that he has on the go. East Texas UFOs, though, I tell you, man, the footage that he's got there, the videos, wow. So let's just hold it there for now, though, because, I mean, this could, we got, in my mind here as a producer, I'm seeing like, you know, two or three whole completely separate different shows right now. So just to kind of keep things on track, though, if we could, and thank you, James. If you have any more to offer there, be sure to let us know via the text chat area, and maybe we can plug a line through to you once again.
I just had one more thing to say before we get back along to their story. I do like the way that she labels ghosties, and I'm sure you have other vocabulary for other things as well. And that's something that, from people I know on a personal basis and that really do experience things like this, that we do create our own categories for different things. Our own vocabulary, per se.
Yeah, she definitely has that.
Hashtag,
and thank you for that.
Hashtag ghosties.
Yeah.
Okay, and there goes James off keeping a great eye and lookout there from a high above in the crow's nest.
Awesome.
Really important job, of course, that we have here. All kinds of work to be done on the ship. The Robin Hood, as we refer to it. One of the things that we've got to do, though, before we carry on, is in accordance with the ship's articles and Captain Long, John Sinclair's request, the way that he has things set up here, and, you know, because he is the captain after all, we typically ask guests if they can provide some sort of pirate story of any sort. Even like just, you know, a little bit of trivia or some sort of anecdote of some sort. Anything along those lines. So nothing too major, more just a formality than anything else. And that's about as complicated as it gets. So anything you managed to pull out of your hat tonight?
Well, just that they're still alive and well here in the French Quarter. You definitely see them daily. You know, not necessarily boarding a big wooden pirate ship, but you see them scuffling around. You know, and, of course, you know, Pirate Sally is alive and well if you want to get a little bit of the Green Fairy, and then, of course, the blacksmith shop of Jean Lafitte is always a popular place in the French Quarter.
With ghosties alive and
well. Oh, yeah. Lots of ghost stories there.
Okay, well, my God. Let's just continue then, if we can. There's just so much to, as far as the city of New Orleans is concerned, and the kind of the more occult or paranormal end to things. The history is quite something, of course. So I don't want to get drawn into that too much here tonight, other than what you feel is appropriate from your end of things. Alta, I know you've got some really good stories to share. I think it's based out of New Orleans, the history of some of the houses that you lived in there. Quite some very odd experiences and occurrences. But let's just take it back now, if we could, to you and Chad on your blind date. Pick things up from there and see where we can take things as far as how the blind date went and what other high strangeness occurred that night.
Well, besides the bizarreness, as far as I'm concerned, of the family connection with Chad's grandfather and I, that really tweaked me inside because I was already dealing with a lot of mystery that I was not handling very well. And so ultimately, Chad and I didn't see each other for 3 months after our original arrangement. 3 months later, he'd left Arkansas. He'd actually come to Louisiana. His father lived in Louisiana with his Chad's stepmother. And Chad had come to Louisiana to spend some time with them. We had had no contact for 3 months. So as far as Chad was concerned, I was long gone. And in my mind, I was trying to make it that way because, again, it was just too strange for me. I just felt like I knew there was a hidden hand involved in my life that I just didn't like. I consider all of this a real trickster element kind of experience, all of it. So 3 months later, something changed inside of me, like something turned a switch on. And the switch was find Chad. Now I become dogmatic about it. I'm absolutely determined. I'm going to find him and I'm going to apologize, try to explain myself, what I can't even explain to myself, why I've disappeared for all these months. So as it would be, I do locate Chad. He's in Louisiana, and he's just been in a really bad car accident with a couple of his family members. Now, he's not hospitalized, but he's beat up pretty good and bruised and banged and what have you. He shares with me in the conversation that he's on his way back to Arkansas within 24 hours. He'd already made up his mind he was returning. And I believe he was catching a ride with some friends or what have you that were coming to Arkansas. So I make it clear to him that I'll be there. I can't wait. I'm so excited. And I swear to him, you know, I'll be there. I'll be there when you get there. I'll be there. So that afternoon, I go out on a bike ride with a guy friend of mine, just because I love bikes. And it was a very crazy day involving that afternoon with a whole lot of high strangeness. I'll just keep using that term. Before the day is over with, when this guy is bringing me back home, we're going at pretty good rate of speed, too fast. And it's on a clear night, perfect weather, but for whatever reason, that bike came out from under him. And I went airborne, and the guy stayed with the bike. He slid for I don't know how far, because I went airborne, and I get hurt very badly. I end up in the hospital. Now, this is at the same time I'm supposed to be meeting Chad. So a couple days go by and what have you, and I basically escape from the hospital because I know that he's never going to believe that this has happened to me until I can find him. And so just as insane as all the rest of our story sounds, that's how it begins. I come driving up on him and I'm all stitched up and he's beat up and I'm beat up and we never look back. We, from that point forward, decided all beat up. We're going to figure this out and try to make this work. And so thus we did. That was in 1990. A lot happened also in the mix. Other types of things were happening to us and around us. We'll move. We married a year later in 1991. And then, if I might, just for the sake of the story and not to bore anybody, we'll move to 1995. Chad and I have moved to Louisiana. We're living in an area outside of Hammond, Louisiana, which is about an hour out of New Orleans. It's pretty swampy. It's pretty rural. Hammond is a small college town. Chad and I are going to have, must have been maybe like a Friday night. After work, we're going to come into town and have dinner and drinks. And I'll have Chad share with you what happened to us on our drive into town just to have dinner and drinks that night.
Yeah, as we're coming into town, we go around this like bend in the road, and there's this group of tall pines. And then back behind the tall pines is the local, you know, shopping center there. And as we get around this group of pines, out tonight, now it's still pretty daylight, you know, it's early evening, so, you know, it's not like it's dark outside, it's, you can see clearly, and we get around this group of trees, and we look up, and there's this massive craft. I mean, it takes up the sky. It was pretty low to the ground, you know, below cloud level, and it was huge. It was bigger than the Walmart Supercenter, shopping center, parking lot. It was like, you know, a huge ship. It was very, very dark. It was kind of a rectangle, but not as wide on one end as the other, moving very slow, if at all. It had two or three lights on the front, three or four lights in the back, and it was on the right-hand side of the road, and so I'm driving. So we look up, and I kind of look down at Alta. Alta kind of looks at me like, you know, we didn't say anything, but it's like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? I look back up just to make sure I saw what I thought I saw, which I did. I still saw it there. And then I just focused my attention back onto the road. It was as if to say, if I don't look at it, if I don't see it, you know, it won't know I saw it. And we went on to dinner. I don't remember talking about it. We had our dinner and drinks. We went home, never talked about it. The only reason we brought it up again is the next day we did hear it on some kind of media, which radio or I believe it was, you know, something local that, you know, other people had witnessed or seen strange objects in the sky. But, you know, our brain exploded. That was when, you know, it was like, oh, wow, it's real. Because there's no way that I don't believe we had the technology for something this massive.
TR, I think it's a TR-3B, TX-3B, something along those lines there. Hashtag fact check. It's a triangular shape type craft that is quite well known. It's like one of these open secrets, you know, that I guess you know, you'll never hear about on CNN particularly or any of the larger Fox News, MSNBC. I'm not sure what else they've got out there, you know, as far as American media outlets or what have you. But they do exist, apparently, and there are these, you know, black op kind of off the book projects, a lot of money being funneled in the direction as well, too, to the tune of many hundreds of billions of dollars from what I understand, and I think what many other people have probably heard, too. So, but as far as these, you know, these are smaller craft, the TR-3Bs. What you're talking about there sounds more like a mothership type deal.
Yeah, it was, you know, I've never been close to a battleship, you know, as far as like a Navy ship or anything like that, but I mean, it was that big. It was, you know, I see the ships going up and down the Mississippi, and you know, there's nothing compared to how big this thing was.
I was just gonna, corroborate that. I talked with the East Texas director of MUFON like back in 2011 when I first started trying to get out there and filming and putting this stuff out there. I talked with him on a personal basis, and they said him and a crew, I think back in the early 2000s, said they saw a craft that they could only describe as the Walmart Supercenter craft because it was that massive as it passed over them. So it's not just an isolated incident. There's lots of people that see massive crafts, and there's also other reports. There's a major story out there about it, another city in Texas that had seen, like, the whole city basically saw a ship that large as you were describing there. So
Stevensville, I believe, is the name of.
Right. Yeah, Stevensville. Now you fact.
That's right.
Right.
So, and that's exactly what I was going to bring up, and you know, kind of bounce that off of Chad and Alta. But now, the one question I do have: this is Louisiana, 1999. Just to be clear, or maybe, you know. If I'm not, you know, if I don't have my facts straight on that, please, you know, feel free to, you know, set the record straight. But what was the name of the town once again?
It was just outside of Hammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D,
sure.
I believe is
gotcha.
The spelling, Louisiana, and it was 1995.
Ah, 95. How about that? So 5 years after you met, essentially. And it was dusk, getting around that time of the night, I guess. And were you alone on the road?
No, I mean, there was traffic. There was nobody, like, pulling over to the side of the road or You know, we never saw anybody reacting or pointing up to the sky or anything like that. You know, it was just, it was so surreal. You know, it was almost like I didn't notice anything else except what was going on in the sky, you know. And then I just kind of, I don't know, just like I wanted it to not be real or, you know, I don't know. Just,
we went into shock.
Yeah, I went into shock.
There's no question about it. You can tell that I don't have a problem speaking because this is our truth and I have no problem sharing our truth. But this absolutely shocked me silent. My head turned away from it instantly. You know, I'm much more graphic, as you can tell, also than Chad is, in terms of trying to relay this information. But I just so desire, and I have always desired, for anybody out there who's having these experiences or going through this to understand, we understand, because I was shocked into silence. I was staring at Chad, begging him mentally, just silently, to tell me that that wasn't there. But I could see in his face, he's in shock. And we never spoke about it, never. But if we were forced to have to know it, because the next morning, I believe it was local news, we turned on the radio, and it had been reported. So that means that others had seen it. So it meant that it was real.
Yeah, you
bet.
But
we still never spoke about it.
Sounds like a really powerful experience, of course. It had a major impact on your psyche.
Well, that was, you know, in essence, my terminology is, at that point, basically didn't seem to allow us to go back to sleep. There's no doubt that we had been working very hard to stay asleep from being arranged in 1990, because as I said before, there's a lot more details to all of that, of high strangeness. So we moved very shortly after this encounter from that area to the French Quarter. So again, as I like to express, so anybody who's kind enough to hear us, please take note of this, and we mean this very sincerely as well. We were extremely naive about moving to an area that is, you know, structures, buildings that were built 300 years ago that are still standing with all of that energy. And so we had no idea what we were moving to. When we moved to the French Quarter, we, again, on top of being naive, did I mention how naive we were? We also didn't have a lot of money, and we had no clue that it was that difficult in terms of living decently at a fairly high cost that we weren't prepared for. So we'd never had children. We'd made the decision when we knew we were going to marry to never have children. So we've lived a lot like a pirate, I think, in many ways, certainly nomadic, very spontaneous kind of life. And we end up living originally, our first location happens to be above the original Voodoo Temple. It's on the outskirts of the French Quarter. It's kind of it's on Rampart Street, literally the last street of the quarter. And the quarter is about, I believe it's about 13 blocks square. Well, from the moment we move into that apartment, it's a small apartment above the temple. It also has the largest courtyard at the time, if I understand correctly, of the French Quarter. The Voodoo Priestess lives in a large complex that's separate from the temple on one side of the courtyard. On the other side of the courtyard, structures, again, all of these structures were built, my understanding would have been at the end of the 1700s, beginning of the 1800s. That location across from the priestess confines was originally slave quarters that had been converted into sweet little efficiency apartments. So, but I assure you, we discover up close and personal, I don't care how many slaps of paint you put on something and make it pretty and cute, that energy is alive and well. And it is constant, and it would manifest in whatever form it chose to. In the beginnings, it was playful to me. I felt it was somewhat playful, like large amount of money, cash money, would disappear for long periods of time, days. Then all of a sudden, I remember dumping the basket of clean clothes on the bed to, you know, that had been dried, to fold, and all of that money is in the center of that. Now, it hadn't been washed with all this stuff or dried. It just happened to fall out of the middle of all of that. That kind of, I guess others might call that poltergeist kind of, whatever people label these things.
It's quite the magic trick. It's a abracadabra. Yeah. Abracadabra.
I like it. Right. Certainly hasn't happened enough.
Hey, listen, Alta, we've got about seven people, looks like, all together. Join us now in the live streaming YouTube area. So maybe a few of them have had similar experiences. I think a couple of them actually might have, just to call it a hunch or educated guess. But this is one of the chapters that you have, I'm assuming, in the Orbducted book. I know you've commented in the past about how short the book is, and really, in my mind, I'm thinking, with all the stories and experiences of paranormal and esoteric type that you've endured and witnessed. Well, I think, in fact, your publisher has talked about maybe producing half a dozen books, or three or four, something along those lines.
That certainly has been the suggestion. If there's an interest, of course. Because, again, so much has been edited out. You know, again, just trying to take the temper of where there is interest, and certainly if there's interest, that's our desire.
It's only about $10, too, I guess. Is that right? Ten for the book? About $10?
That's right.
Right.
And how many pages is it altogether?
I think it's about 70.
Mm-hmm. The editor wanted to kind of keep it to the point of, you know, our what we call the main event. You know, and that's our Orbducted.
Well, they call it the main event.
Yeah, they call it the main event, the bigger, I guess, story. So they cut out a lot of the small, like our little ghost things and stuff like that. It was just kind of stuck with our Orbducted experience.
That's definitely, so all these other, as you've talked, the minor or smaller occurrences, as you refer to them, I could definitely see that being another book. Too much difficulty there for sure. So the main event, as it were, because I mean, we could get into the voodoo end of things more. I know that's where apparently you claim to have some sort of, I'm not sure if it's called like a time slip or interdimensional, such a strange experience there, Alta, where your dog passes out just out of the blue along with a house guest that showed up, and just they immediately seem to fall asleep for some reason. And you're almost, it seems, transported off into, taken back in time.
Right, exactly. You know, just again, I just describe it as I experienced it, and it would have appeared or felt that I had been transported back to the period of time of when that property had slaves.
Why don't we get into that a little bit then? You can describe things for our listeners, just a few more of the details, I guess. So how did it all kind of play out then?
So we're relatively new living there, only within a few months, if I remember correctly, and kind of getting the hang of it to the best of our ability, because the Voodoo Priestess is very engaged in tourism, and there's some movie making that's going on in our courtyard. California's come in with, you know, Hollywood production kind of business. And this is all new to Chad and Alta completely, this world. So as we're just trying to find our bounds and negotiate this kind of environment, I've got a girlfriend that I've met in a shop that I'm working in. And she is coming over one afternoon. Chad's at work. She's coming over one afternoon to hang out with me. We're just going to have a girls' afternoon, having some drinks and just hang. She shows up with a bottle of something, and I had a bottle of something. And at the time, we had a Rottweiler Doberman that was still somewhat puppy. I believe she was probably about a year old or thereabouts. And just a love. She was absolutely a love. Her name's Neffy, short for Nefertiti. And she's a pretty good-sized puppy. at this stage. And girlfriend shows up, and I don't even remember us having a drink. It seems like it happened that quickly. She sits down. I've got a daybed in my living room. Sits down on the daybed, and next thing I know, she's a little tiny thing. She just kind of leans over and kind of in a fetal position and just goes to sleep. The passing out part of it is, I mean, literally, I don't remember us ever even having a drink, but I assure you it would have taken a whole lot more than a drink for either of us to have been knocked out. And no drugs, and she just goes to sleep. And so I'm like, well, okay, it's the French Quarter. It's a strange world, and people sometimes, you know, sleep during the day and awake all night, and who knows? So I'm not questioning anything. I'm just thinking, all right, I'll just get out of the room and let her rest. Well, I notice my dog does the same thing, but she's kind of a love bunny, so I'm not thinking too much about any of that. I step out of the room. I go into my bedroom, and in the time it takes me to step into my bedroom and shut my bedroom door, I remember going over to the bed, and all I remember is sitting my booty down. But even really, I think before I remember even really sitting down, next thing I know, I'm back in my living room. Just that fast. Now, I'm standing. I have no memory of coming out of that bedroom back into the living room. It happened that fast. I'm standing in the living room. I'm looking around me. It's not very large. It's a small apartment. But Chad and I have put a lot of work into making it adorable, you know, all the paint and so on and so forth. Well, in this moment, it looks like I've been transported in time backwards because I feel like I'm now standing in this apartment when it was maybe originally built. It's old. It's not filthy, but it's dust and it's old and has kind of a gloomy feel and look to it, lighting to it. A few feet in front and to the left of me are three young women of color that look like they're 19, early 20s. They're all standing in a row. Each one of them has an arm extended out towards me. They look like they have never touched their hair. Their hair is wild looking. And it's crowed, and I mean, it's crazy looking. And they're very gaunt. They are wearing what I call tattered dresses. But they were the most beautiful little beings I had ever experienced at that time that I could remember in my life. Meaning the energy that was coming out of them was yummy. Then I remember them saying they just wanted to touch me. Well, I wanted them to touch me because I liked it. I was moving towards them. But before I could actually move towards them, this is the consciousness, all of a sudden I got something right behind me and it's right on my neck. And it's that close. Enough room to just basically pivot around. And as I pivoted around, it's a female around my height. I'm about 5'5". I'd say about my width. It seems like we were pretty even in size. And she's veiled. She appears to look like so-called Virgin Mary pictures. That Caucasian. And you'll notice my language, so-called, what people identify the Virgin Mary was to have looked like. This is what her appearance is. Beautiful Caucasian, veiled female, who, again, was exuding an energy of love, again, I cannot describe. I don't remember ever experiencing these kinds of emotions before. Her arms were outstretched, like almost in a hug kind of gesture. And I felt like I was falling into her as I was leaning in for that hug. And it was this, you know, as crazy as it all sounds, it was this eternal yumminess. I just don't know how to find other words for it. I didn't want it to stop. And so as I'm leaning in, she says to me, she speaks English, she calls me by name, and she uses a tone that there's no words again to describe it, so beautiful. And her language was, And believe me, this is not easy to admit. It never has been easy to admit any of this parts of these, you know, what we're trying to express to you that has happened to us. But these are her words to me. She said, Alta, you must get stable. Now, you know, my normal reaction is she just effing called me crazy. Well, that'd be my normal, but that's not what I was experiencing. I just remember the words, that tone, and then the experience was over. So I have no idea what I experienced other than what I relayed to you. But it did seem to be preparing us, certainly, for what was coming.
Interesting, what was coming and preparation for everything that you would be experiencing at some point down the road. First, what I'd like to get clear on, though, and we should have addressed this earlier, but you self-identify as a sensitive. I've heard you use that term before in other interviews that you've done. What exactly is a sensitive?
Well, I only understand, you know, how I identify with the term, because I've had a real problem with language throughout my life and labels and tags and what have you. The term sensitive, as far as I'm concerned, is I seem to have a lot of sensitivity to energy. From the time, as I mentioned to you, my first memory is being tested for ESP in a military hospital when I'm about 9 years old. This would have made it about 66, 67, somewhere in that time frame. My mom claimed that from the time I could speak, that I was a prophetic dreamer. So I'm a little one having dreams about adult stuff and, you know, repeating this stuff. And so, again, just based off of what she would say and then this first memory, this being tested, and then trying. And as I said to you, the ghosties throughout my life wasn't something that I just walked around experiencing all the time. But out of my circle of peeps, my friends, my what have you, it seemed to be me more than them that was having this otherworldly kind of connections. It seems to manifest in very different ways, but it certainly has seemed to be a part of my being. You know, the night in 97 is we're about to move into, I won't go too far, I'm waiting by your guidance. But on that particular night, there was no question from the moment that night started for the three of us. My term was the energy is off. So I seem to have some kind of sensitivity to energy. And I have no idea what that really means. It just seems to be my calling or not. The good, the bad, and the ugly of it all.
It's quite something. We're talking, yeah, sensitivity to energy. People, I mean, there's not too many people that find themselves as children of, I think is what you said, around 7 years of age, being tested for psychic abilities in military hospitals. So, yeah, that's something worth bearing in mind. I think the Zener cards, I think is what they're called, with the shapes of the stars, circles, what else, a triangle, that sort of thing, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So Zener cards, you betcha. So, and you did score a little high from what I understand. Is that not the case?
You know, again, that memory that I've expressed is all that I know about that. So the point is I, to be quite honest with you, I have no idea. I will mention this since we're on that subject. I have discovered, because again, I've devoted 20 years to research, privately, personally. Nobody's working with us. Nobody seems to be interested in working with us. And I found that very strange and interesting and lots of emotions attached to that. But what I wanted to mention is that I've discovered that there appears to be many children out in this world, particularly in this country, that were tested for various reasons in these kinds of facilities. There's a gentleman by the name of Grant Cameron, a Canadian. My understanding of his being involved in this world, this particular topic, was a long history on his part of being involved with UFO kind of connections, but it started off when I discovered him, he'd written books about presidents and UFOs kind of language. So somebody suggested a couple of years ago that I contact him or that he and I connect with each other, that he could be helpful for me. So I did so, and he was kind enough to at least respond, because a lot of people haven't even done that. So I thank him for that. It was short, sweet, and very direct. Basically, I was out of luck. If I thought I was ever going to get those records that I was trying to seek of having these experiences and being tested in this hospital as a child, I could pretty well forget it, because he was positive that that wasn't going to be possible. And that was very difficult for me to hear. I don't accept it, but I trust his guidance. You know, he seems to be much wiser than I am in the sense of his knowledge versus mine. But still, there are many of us.
So it would seem, yeah, there's a lot of reports and stories of this type, and we have had other guests on the show who have shared their, you know, their testimonies and personal stories and experiences along these lines. It gets a little dark at times as well, too, into the area of abuse and like MK Ultra type, you know, brainwashing and, you know, sexual, you know, just totally things that are completely off the charts, of course, that I don't think I'm not really, I don't really want to go there right now with this, because there's, we were limited with time here. We've, in fact, we've only got about another maybe 20 minutes or so, 25 tops, and we've got to be, you know, steering the ship back into the harbor. So it's amazing how time does fly here each week on the Robin Hood. Grant Cameron, though, interesting name. We've had him on the show. It was Alien Rock was the title of the episode that we put together. We can link that up there in the show notes, of course, seeing how his name came up. His agent reached out to us, as did you, as do a few people from time to time. It's always a real thrill to have that occur, because with that being the case, we kind of get the sense that people are listening and are interested in joining us here and using, I think in this case that's fair enough to say, because, you know, using or employing or putting to work, I guess, the platform it is that we offer here, so that they can work on reaching a larger audience with their story or stories and testimonies that they have to offer. But yeah, looking forward to having Grant return in the new year, working on that as things stand. So what I was thinking maybe we could do now is turn the attention back to Chad, because I think this is a really central part of the Orbducted book that you've put together. I'm not sure how where it all kind of went down, but Chad, you seem to have had, is it, now I'm not sure if it's a contactee or abductee and the distinction between those two terms. Chad, are you up to speed on that, or should we go turn to the crow's nest maybe and see if James can set things straight?
As far as myself, I do feel like a contactee, not an abductee. I do believe that my experience was a positive experience, and I did have contact with this blue being that you do see on the cover of our book. So in my terminology, I do feel contacted, not abducted.
Okay, and let's set things up then and try to get a clear sense of how it all occurred.
So Chad's pointing at me. I'll start us off and then hand it back to him. 1997, Chad and I have gotten away from the Voodoo Temple environment. We've moved further into the quarter. We're now living in a very elegant condominium townhouse. Life's looking quite lovely. I'm about to turn 40. I had been announcing ever since Chad had met me 7 years. At that point, I had been telling anybody that would hear me, I couldn't wait to turn 40. That's a very bizarre statement for a woman to make. And yet that was my consistency, because I knew something big was going to happen. The term was Chadwick.
Yeah, Alta kept telling me that, you know, well, she told me two things when we first got together. One was she would never mother her own, but she would mother many. And the next one was, I can't wait until I'm 40 years old because something major life-altering change will happen. And again, we were always thinking positive, so.
What ended up essentially happening is Chad and I are, life is looking pretty decent for us. Chad's a little entrepreneur in the quarter, and I'm working in a real exclusive salon that had been in business for 70 years, a family-owned business. And just, you know, we're making good names for ourselves. And as I said, life's moving along. And my mom was living in Arkansas at the time, Little Rock. She was in poor health. She was ready to relocate to live in our courtyard of this beautiful environment that we had moved to. We pre-rented her a mother-in-law cottage in our courtyard, and we were all going to look after each other, and life was going to be just great. And so as it would be on my 40th birthday, rather than the positive, if you will, it turned out my mom died on that day. And the shock of that is, you know, again, I struggled with words at times, and that's one of my struggles. It was too big for words for me. So it kind of set the motion, if you will, for me to go into a real dark space mentally and very confused, even more than I had been before. The shop that I worked for, they had hired a young woman that, as I said, her name is mentioned as Christine in the book. She, at the time, was 24. Chad was 30, and I had just turned 40. It's about 3 months after the death of my mom. It was in around September. September, October, we're thinking in about September that this event took place. This young woman knew that I had gone through a lot of pain and suffering and that Chad was suffering also with the death of my mom. She asked me if I wanted to go out one night into the quarter and have dinner and drinks. And we had never done that before. And so I agreed and I said, let's call Chad. He'll want to join us. We want him to join us. We only lived a couple blocks from the shop, so we call Chad, he changes, and he meets us at the shop. We closed the shop, she had the keys, so that's why we know exactly kind of when this night started. We shut the shop at 9:30, locked the doors, and that's when I mentioned earlier, from the moment we stepped outside of the shop, and I don't walk around and talk like this normally, but for some reason, when we stepped out of the shop, as I said before, the energy felt off. It felt different. And I remember making note of it and saying it to both of them. I remember them both acknowledging that as well. We didn't make a big deal about it, but we took note of it. And then we took off to start our evening. Well, when I said the energy was off, I wasn't even kidding by those words, because we decided we were going to start on Bourbon Street, famous Bourbon Street, and just walk across the quarter, that 13 blocks, and it was going to be a spontaneous night. We had no plans. So, again, for the story's sake, it was a very bizarre beginnings. We noticed immediately that there didn't appear to be any people. There were a few stragglers, but the French Quarter is always alive. It's always happening. There's always something going on. And on this night, that did not appear to be what was happening. It was like stepping in the twilight zone is the best way to describe this. To get us to that actual corner of where the event took place, we crossed the quarter, and in each location that we stopped at, there were three different locations. There were no people. There were no customers. There were no, there was restaurants. There was no wait staff. There were no patrons. There was always just one person in each one of these locations, a manager or a bartender. So this is just too creepy for words, but we're not thinking nothing paranormal, high strangeness. We're just thinking this is just crazy. Where is everybody? By the time we get across the quarter, our last location, we discover the same story. It's empty. We don't stay at any of these places. It's now about 11 o'clock. That's the last thing that the three of us remember collectively. I'd like to mention also, before Chad takes this over, that none of us had anything to drink, nor were we drugged. To the best of our knowledge, there was nobody around to drug us, nor were we taking drugs. And then ultimately, that's the last thing the three of us remember is 11 o'clock on a street corner. The next thing I know, it's the next morning, somewhere between 8 and 9 in the morning. And I'm not waking up. I'm coming to sitting straight up in my living room. The sun is blasting through my window. I'm rubbing my arms and I realize that there's something in my upper arm. I'm immediately in shock because I seem to be the only one out of the three of us that has memory of what I call the in-between experience. Chad's completely blank on that night on a natural level, and so is our friend. Now, Chad's had regression several years later, and he can give you an account of what came out in that regression that seems fairly involved. Our friend, she had a completely different experience than Chad and I had a completely different experience than either of them. So where you'd like us to go with that?
It sounds to me like you each were taken off into your own separate altered state or a story of some kind. So, yeah, a dimensional type adventure really is what it sounds like. And we definitely want to hear about this. But first, I think it's important to point out this third person who I believe goes by the name in your book as her, it's Christine, but that's a pseudonym. She is not willing to come on the record. She does exist. She is out there, and maybe an investigative reporter could track her down if they really wanted to, I suppose. I'm not sure how willing she would be at that time to speak or come on the record. Maybe at some point in the future she'll come around and, maybe you could share her experience as well, too, because if she shared that with you, or it sounds like she was perhaps traumatized, but any details that she did provide would be great. But let's, with the time that we have here, because this is really this is, as you say, the main event and kind of core, I guess, central part of the book with all its particulars. So, yeah, let's start with Chad and that hypnotic regression and what I think you were saying. At the time, none of you really recalled too much exactly, but it was through hypnosis that some more things came to the surface. Just briefly, though, before we get into that, just to be clear, did you yourself, Alta, or did this Christine, the friend of yours, did either of you bother to take hypnotic regression?
So our friend is still, we're still connected to her all these years later, long distance. She's been very adamant about having no interest of being public about any of this, but has given us permission to speak on her behalf. I also got her version of this in writing, if you will, over the computer several years ago. But I have to say that, just very quickly, she was extremely vague. And when she recorded, when I got her to type it, her memory, because as time is moving forward, what memory she had seems to be leaving her. In answer to your question about regression, to the best of my knowledge, she's never done anything about any of that. In my case, I did, in fact, pay a world-renowned person a lot of money in cash to, because if I was going to do it, I thought I was going to try to do it with what they claim was the best. It did not go well between this woman and I at all, and the regression didn't take place. I did have high strangeness happen in this event, but I certainly was not regressed. I am the only one out of the three that has memory of the in-between. I have no memory of coming off the street, and I have no memory of being returned home the next day, but I have a very distinct, acute memory of in-between.
Did you have, I hope you didn't embark on this regression session alone. You had Chad was with you or someone else to kind of witness things. That is quite dangerous, of course, to go into any hypnosis session without a trusted partner or someone else on hand to kind of keep a watch on things. You weren't alone with this lady that you gave all this money to, were you?
Well, Chad and I had to drive a couple of hours to her. She was doing a seminar in Atlanta that happened to be a couple hours away from where we lived. So we had to drive to her suite. She brought us both in. She sat us both down, and she recorded our story. I got very irritated, honest to admit, as she was recording all of our story. She indicated that she intended to use some of our story in some of her future books, and I asked her how she could do that without our permission, and she made it clear that she could. She would just change our names. I knew things were going very south at that point. At that moment, then she dismissed Chad. She asked him to leave, that she wanted to do this regression alone with me. I've discovered that seems to be pretty standard. And so, again, we had high strangeness take place between her and I before the regression actually tried to take place, and then it just didn't happen.
Well, let me just stop you there then. Myself, there's no way in hell I would ever allow someone to take me down that path alone. And, you know, I guess we all got decisions to make, but a bit of a misstep there perhaps. Although, as you said, just the energy too, just to kind of add to things, you being a sensitive, of course, that it just didn't feel good, and her ethics clearly seem to have been quite off kilter there. More interested, how much money are we talking? Are you willing to disclose the amount?
You know, it was a substantial amount of money for me.
$100,000.
Everybody has their own perception. No, it was, you know, a few hundred dollars.
Okay. And it sounds like you're not willing to disclose this lady's name.
No, we've never, in all the time that we've been interviewing since, for several years now, we've never been public about anybody that is known in the field. Because that's not our objective. Our objective has always been to just try to share what's happening with us.
Yeah. A lot of flim-flam artists, I would say, that's my own personal opinion, just being very skeptical, although quite open-minded, clearly, as we have you here. You and Chad sharing your story.
We are grateful.
I'm
we're skeptical too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Chad and I are extremely skeptical.
Sure.
We've tried to only deal with folks who had big names in these fields, thinking this was the safe route. But please always remember, in anything that we shared with you, as I've always said, no book of rules. They did not give us a book of rules on any of this. And it's just whatever we've stumbled through and done, we're grateful we've managed to get this far and sharing what we're able to share.
Let's turn things over to Chad then, because we are once again pressed for time. And then if you're able to make it, we're going to kind of carry things on over to the Rogues Gallery. It's the after show that we put together here on a weekly basis. It's the kind of the premium Patreon content that we offer our subscribers. Just to remind listeners, of course, too, that half of all Patreon money that we managed to generate, it goes directly to charity. So hashtag WWRHD, what would Robin Hood do? He and his merry crew of men and women would be giving a fair chunk of change to charity. So Chad, let's hear it then, man. This sounds I'm on my seat's edge here. wanting to hear what came out through your over the course of your regression session, and this was not with the same individual, was it?
No, this was totally someone different.
So you, and this was before, after, Alta's encounter there.
Mine was before.
Gotcha. Let her rip then.
Well, again, I remember, that night being really crazy, really strange. And again, only out for, an hour and a half. I remember standing on the stoop mid-block. And, the last thing I remember is out saying, I just want to go home. Now, what comes out of the regression is we're standing there. I look around the corner. And I could see this bright, very bright light coming from around the corner. And I could kind of see it through the windows of the shop that was there on the corner. I get the girl's attention. We walk around the corner. And we walk on, and this would be on Frenchman Street. And about half a block down the street, there's this orb, this beautiful, bright, electric, just yummy orb. And it's probably about 12 foot in diameter. It's about 15 foot off the ground. And again, it's about half a block down the street.
And nobody is around. You and your two companions. It's just not very much activity going on for some reason.
Right. And this is more now it's not as popular a place as it is now. Back in 97, you know, it was more of just a few local bars and clubs. But, you know, this would be a local place, so there would be activity. But again, it's just the three of us, and we sit there, we stand there kind of looking at this thing for just a few seconds, and it just comes towards us and just engulfs us. It abducts us. It takes us in. My next memory is I'm walking down this corridor. The walls are very metallic gray, very smooth, no rivets, no bolts, no seams. Following this little being in front of me. He's probably about 3.5 feet tall, big bulbous head, kind of a pale gray skin. Now, I only saw him from behind. He was wearing this skin-tight kind of scuba diver-looking suit, you know. And now, he had substance. You know, he kind of waddled when he walked. He was kind of dwarfish, you know. He wasn't like the thin aliens that you see on TV. Now, out of the corner of my eye to my left, I could see a tall blonde female walking beside me. This kind of describes that our friend that was with us, but I didn't turn to see if it was her, or don't remember seeing, you know, turning to see if it was her. My next memory is I'm in this room, and it just seems infinite. It just seems huge. It's very, very dark. Now, I could see off in the distance, I could see my immediate area, and then off in the distance, a few yards away, I could see a tall blonde female laying on an examining table. She was nude, but she was censored, you know, like on regular TV, the way they censor body parts and stuff. And there were three beings around her. There were one on each side and one at her head. They were very, very tall. 7-8 feet tall. Very what I describe as praying mantis-y looking, you know, big bulbous heads, big eyes, their mouths were real close to their chin, their arms were kind of, you know, crinkled like a praying mantis. They were wearing these cloaks, kind of like Grim Reaper without the hoodie, you know, kind of thing. The person on the table never seemed to be in distress or... It was almost like she was unconscious. Never saw any kind of probing or, you know, needles or anything weird like that. I focused my attention back to my immediate. And when I turn and look over to my right, there's this little blue being. And he looks a lot like the grays that you see on TV. You know, big bulbous head, almond-shaped eyes, small slit for a mouth. Very tiny. He was probably about 3-4 feet tall, very thin, but he was this vibrant blue. And I remember thinking, you know, wow, he's blue. And his aura, his presence was that of like a shaman / teacher, professor, scientist, healer. You know, just all this knowledge together, you know, it's like the science and the healing arts kind of together. And he goes over and he picks up this box and he has it in his right hand. And he takes his, now he's only got 4 digits, you know, 4 fingers. He takes his hand and he puts it into the side of the box. And when he pulls his hand out, there's this kind of blobby kind of substance, free floating above his hand a couple of inches. It was same color blue as he was. It had little metal, sparkly, glittery kind of things in it. I don't even remember him setting down the box. The next thing I know, he takes his right hand. Again, he's only got 4 digits. He takes his 2 middle fingers, puts them up almost like in a peace sign, and his outer fingers folded in, almost kind of like what you see, you know, Buddhist priests or, you know, the depictions of saints and stuff like that, you know.
No fear.
And when he does,
That's what it's a, yeah. It's a no fear mudra. It's the right hand.
Yes.
Stop. No, don't be afraid. No fear.
Right. Means, yeah. Gotcha. Well, when he does this, this substance starts spinning. And the faster it spun, the blueness and the sparkly kind of dissipate out of it. And it's kind of orbiting it, you know, like the solar system. And it's going just super fast. And it starts slowing down, and this blobby substance had turned into this, what is now a solid. It's a double-pointed crystal, you know, very clean, very clear, you know, pyramid-shaped, but again, double-pointed. And I remember thinking to him, you know, telepathically, I guess, you know, why are you showing this to me? You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. This is something important. Why are you showing this to me? And he told me that I would know in time or when it's time. My next memory is I'm in this other room. There's only three walls, two that are very straight and one that's kind of concave. And there's this overstuffed leather chair in the middle of the room. And I hate even saying it, you know, because it just seems so. But I remember thinking to myself, you know, how out of place it is because, again, the walls are smooth, metallic, you know, futuristic. And here's this overstuffed leather chair. And I remember thinking to myself, it looks comfortable, but it's not. So I focus my attention back to the wall that's kind of concave. And I get a little closer to it. And what I thought was a solid metallic wall, I could see through it. It was transparent. And I could see stars. And, you know, it was like I was out in the galaxy. You know, it's like I was out in space somewhere. I could see stars and planets and, you know, all this. And I'm just kind of standing there in awe. And all of a sudden, this little craft just outside this wall window zooms past. And it gets about 8, 9, 10 feet past me, and it stops. And it's moving pretty fast. It stopped just on a dime, comes back, and it's like right outside this wall window, right, you know, in front of my face. And it was like it was surprised to see me as I was it kind of thing almost. And it had little lights blinking on it and little antennas and metal things moving and shuffling around. It was probably about 3 foot long, about 2 foot wide, kind of rugby ball or football shaped. It sat there for, you know, a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds at the most. I could feel intelligence coming out of it. And it zoomed off again, just in the same way it was going in the first place. And my next memory is waking up in bed the next morning, not knowing how I got home. You know, I woke up confused. I knew I hadn't been drinking. You know, I know what it feels like. Sorry to say, you know, when you drink too much, we were not drinking. We, you know, not doing drugs, could not have been drugged. I know, you know, I mean, you feel different when those things happen. And I did not feel that. All I could feel was what happened, how we got home, and Alta had no answers either.
And this all came out in your regression session. Up to that point, you simply had no memory of this incident or occurrence, the encounter whatsoever. Is that right?
Right. I had no memory of between 11 o'clock and 8, 9 o'clock the next morning when I woke up.
Alta is the only person of the three, I believe, as she's stated, who did have a memory. And she had a different story. She had a different experience altogether, different sort of interdimensional time slipping, as the best term that I can come up with, orbduction. There we go. experience. So, but let me just add too, I'm not sure if the two of you are aware of this or not, but, well, and I did mention it actually briefly just in the little pre-interview that we did, before launching today's show. Memory loss is a very common feature of these alleged encounters or experiences. Some would say maybe abductions or what have you. But my sister actually, there's a couple people, I had family members, my dad and stepmother. My sister was also a part of some occurrence where they just witnessed an object in the sky that seemed to get quite close to them and was in their presence for a couple of minutes. My dad has a pretty clear memory of what occurred, more or less. But my sister claims to have no recollection of this incident whatsoever. And to me, it seems quite odd because these are not the sort of things that happen to us on an everyday sort of basis, really, right? It's like these are once in a lifetime kind of deals for a lot of people. Although in your case, you and Alta, it seems to be an ongoing matter. And that, in fact, even the latest, I'm not sure if there's anything more you want to add to the story. And we are, once again, kind of trying to basically do our best to steer things back to Skullport Harbor and dock the ship as we transition on over to the after show. But just if there's anything. Well, and one more thing I will add before we do, before I just kind of hand the mic back over to you there, Chad, or Alta, if you care to jump in, is that this business of there not being too many people around as well, too, that's been reported repeatedly, when it comes to these things, too. So John Lennon is a classic example. The conversation that Grant Cameron had with myself, and there was a few others, Angel Espino, I believe you appeared as guests on his show not so long ago. I believe it's the Skywatchers podcast is the name of his.
Yeah, we did that last week or 2 ago. Yeah.
Yep. You betcha. And so he joined us there with, it turned out to be a bit of a roundtable. Johnny Webb, of course, who has been the longtime co-host with the Dr. J Radio Live show. So unfortunately, Dr. J's struggling with some pretty major health issues at the moment. We are, many of us here, hoping that he'll be able to get his program back up on track and be able to resume what he was doing with his show. But yeah, John Lennon and his girlfriend at the time, May Pang, reported that it was really odd because when this all occurred that there was no one around. They're out on the balcony. I'm not sure if you're familiar up to speed with the story, but just everyone seemed to have disappeared. It was like they were gone to the Hamptons for the weekend or something, I think is what May Pang said. Quite odd. So, yes. Anything you'd like to add, though, just, Chad or Alta to the story, just to cap things off? We have so much more to talk about, hoping you can join us for the hour-long, the premium content end of things that we put together here as we wind things up. But, wow, what a story. So now, are you willing to disclose the name of the individual who regressed you, or is that all done in confidence as well, much in the way that like a doctor-patient or lawyer-client sort of a relationship would, there's confidentiality? Who regressed you, or is that sort of a top secret and classified?
yeah, we're trying to, we've pretty much kept her, out of the limelight and doing the doctor-patient kind of thing with her. So, and, we're always up to, having a regression, another regression, because I do feel, because there's a lot of empty spots and empty memory there. I'm from one room to the other, not knowing, how I got into that room. So there's got to be more there. I do believe that this subject, I don't believe she was accustomed to this subject. So I believe that she was a little nervous. So I think she kind of would steer me away sometimes when she got nervous at points.
How about that? So this is a first for her then, from the sounds of things. She was not too familiar with these sort of reports and people coming to her with these issues, I guess, things that they're hoping to get resolved. So that's quite something to take note of indeed. Alta, just anything more? I know there's so much more to talk about. We're going to have to save it for the after show as we, there's a number of, popular watering holes that we have here in Skullport Harbor. The Howling Wolf, the Scurvy Dog is the second venue of choice, or the Mossy Wench. Closing comments. I know you've got a website URL. You've got Facebook presence. What else is on the horizon here for the two of you? When's your next book coming out?
Absolutely no idea about that at this moment. Just, you know, at this stage, trying to introduce this little one that we have created. Again, just trying to make sure that there's an interest. This is not an easy task for us, neither one of us. I'm not technically sound, if you will, and, you know, it's a real challenge with me and with computers and so on. And Ted's much better at it than I am, but he doesn't write. So, you know, it's been a huge challenge to get this far. It's why it's taken, you know, essentially the 20 years, and we're taking it as it goes. We're just so thrilled to, again, and especially for folks like yourself, you know, thank you so much again for giving us this time and having an open mind, because, again, Chad and I are very skeptical about so many things that it's just so hard to believe for us even that this is happening to us and that we are saying a lot of the things that we're sharing.
It's kind of tough to be skeptical, too, I suppose, when you wake up with something that appears to be implanted under your skin. And I believe you actually took that in to have it analyzed. It turned out to be what exactly?
Well, actually, it's still there. And I have a second object. I call them unknowns. Again, I've never used the word implant because I don't have memory. And my memory of that night, 97, I have no memory of any object being implanted in my arm, but there's clearly something there. You cannot look at my arm and see any way that anything could be there. There's no scar. There's no weirdness with the skin of any kind, but the object is clearly there. I have no idea. I will tell you this, though, in the experiences, and I realize time is short, in the experiences that Chad and I were put through in getting those x-rays, the original x-rays, the object, the unknown, chose to not take a picture the first two times. It took three times before it would allow a photo of it. As mundane as those x-rays look, to me, they look very mundane. You know, I don't know if I'm expecting something to be jumping around and whatever. I have no idea of what I'm expecting, but when I look at those x-rays, you know, I'm seeing a small, white, oval-shaped something. It just doesn't look like any big deal, but I assure you it has been anything but that. It's been anything but mundane. And it's my take on it is nobody has a clue. Not really. I hear a lot of big language and people with a lot of initials after their names, doctors, physicists, scientists, but there's just too much unknown about all of it.
You had the two objects x-rayed, and as you said, they only showed up after the third attempt when they appeared. It's too bad that Roger Lear is not around anymore. He was quite famous, of course, in this area of, well, like it or not, implants, whether you want to call them alien or not is another matter. There is some talk of the MyLab program, which stands, I believe, for military abductions. You call them unknowns, I think. Is that right?
That's what I call them. I always have. I'll mention, since you brought up Dr. Lear, he was the reason I got the original x-rays. We were dealing with him long distance. He was dealing with us long distance. And, you know, he was the reason why I started all of this in the first place. And so it just, again, it hasn't gone anywhere in terms of anything further than, you know, our own experiences with it. And we've been put through an awful lot, but we've never been here publicly to be victimized or to speak about so much about being victimized. But it has been mind-blowing. I mean, really mind-blowing, the things that we have gone through and been put through.
No kidding. No, nobody, I think, would argue or dispute that. So now here's the thing. They would say there's three scenarios that possibly we'd be looking at here. Either you're crazier than a pair of shithouse rats.
That would be welcome.
Yeah. Secondly, that you're just straight out lying. There's a different, you know, crazy, insane is one thing, and lying is another. Or thirdly, it actually happened basically, you know, along the lines of what the way you're presumably just, you know, kind of truthfully laying it out there for the world to hear and to know about. Tracking devices, though. Let me just follow up this business of the implants and referencing that little catchphrase, because, and the MyLab program, which there's a lot of talk about. So there are some people that seem to be targeted individuals for whatever reason or another, maybe perhaps in your case, because you at an early age seem to have displayed certain abilities, or just maybe the indigo children. That was a term that has not come up until right now, unfortunately, but, you know, one of these types, which I'm sure you've heard a little bit about. So who really knows what's going on and what's behind it all? But we're going to try to pick things up here as we move on over to the after show portion of things, hoping that you'll be able to stick around. Which of the three watering holes or houses of ill repute would you prefer? The Howling Wolf, Scurvy Dog, or Mossy Wench?
Well, being in New Orleans, we'd have to go to the Howling Wolf, right?
But I vote Mossy Wench, thank you. That was my vote.
All right, and just have to keep an eye out, make sure that there's no more abductions that occur tonight, or if they do, that we are able to fully recall our experience as to what actually happened. Before we do that, though, let's bring James West back into the picture. He's been up there listening and hopefully watching out over the landscape of things as we've been steering the ship around here throughout the high digital seas, and, you know, basically working on presenting a story here this week with our guests Alta and Chad Dillard, the authors of Orbducted in the French Quarter. James, are you there? Do we got you? How are things going as we wind things down?
I'm doing good. And I have I take notes when I do this, but I have too many notes to cover in all of it, so I'm going to save most of it for the after show, of course.
Well, there's one or two quickies you like to throw out there?
With the implants, I actually was doing some studies into like biotechnologies and things to do with plasmas and whatnot. And there's also something like, I don't even think Chad mentioned it in this one, but I hadn't heard earlier when I listened to a quick interview that you had before mentioned a device that the ET had shown you. And it had reminded me in some of the technology that I've been looking into with plasma technologies and biotechnologies. And with those implants that you said, it avoided the x-rays the first few attempts. It's like sometimes these implants are actually alive, and they can shoot, not necessarily alive, but they react as if they were alive to actually choose if they want to be seen or not.
With the cloaking technology that UFOs have, apparently. Same kind of deal.
Exactly. And as some of the listeners know, that's actually been where I've been filming, and that's been my field, essentially, when it comes to all this. But with plasmas, you can hide objects, including anything as big as a Walmart or a planet, theoretically. In fact, if you look in our solar system, there's parts of the universe that we can't really peer into because there's too much density of plasma in that area that signals can't reach out of. So there's limitations to where we can see out of that. But anyway, plasma reacts when it's in a certain form, certain way, certain formation of its structure, reacts certainly. It acts almost like a Faraday cage, and it can prevent certain things from being seen, heard, or signals coming out of it. So, it's very interesting when it comes to those implants, avoiding x-rays.
Well, the thing about it, and Al just said it before in other interviews, when they took that third, or just before they took that third x-ray, she pretty much looked at it and subconsciously said, you know, give me a break. I need this picture. You know, I need this. And that's when it came up. And, you know, again, when we went back for our second x-ray. Again, it did the same thing. He had to take it three times before he was able to capture a picture of it.
And that's the only way I know how to describe it to you quickly, is it would appear to be able to move. Thank the gods that I can't feel it move inside of me, or I don't know that I'd still be here, to be honest with you. But it would seem to be able to move, either stretched outside of the skin where it looks like a big bug bite to the naked eye, or it will seem to bury itself all the way down to the bone, where only I know that it's there. Now, the last that I'll offer about these unknowns is that it also seems or appears to be able to change shape. Now, everything I've done in my research, and I've devoted my life to it now, is telling me that craft change shape. They either are invisible or they're not. They seem to be anything they choose to be. And I guarantee you, so do these, at least this unknown that's in my arm. I have another in my wrist that won't take an x-ray at all. It was only detected with ultrasound. And that was very bizarre in itself. You know, the whole gamut is so mind-bending.
And like you said, with those ships being able to be ever whatever they want, that's exactly the truth, and that's exactly what me and some of the other researchers, when it comes to UFOs themselves, have witnessed and filmed and actually gathered a lot of evidence for. So, yeah, and that's what I was making that connection with, the same technology being in those craft, being seen in the unknowns, as you put it.
We're so interested in what you're doing. I look so forward to, you know, having more conversation with you and hearing more.
That's great. That's great that we've managed to help make the connection. That's what we do.
Awesome.
Enjoy, you know, trying to, the Robin Hood and its crew, we act as matchmakers in a lot of cases. People will be hopefully experiencing a little more of that come mid-December when we launch our 10-day Operation Secret Santa campaign 2017. We're just working on amping up the vibe a little bit here from what we managed to get out there last year. So, yeah, a lot of matchmaking, a lot of fixing, a lot of just working on introducing people. And the one thing that I will say about Facebook, once again, people have heard it here before, listeners to the show, that is a outstanding or a feature that they have which is worth reporting on and giving credit to, is the suggest a friend option that they have there on Facebook. Speaking of which, it as it turns out, I have been put in Facebook jail again, just to let listeners know, for the next week or so. Don't ask me why. I simply logged on this morning and shared a story, actually, from last year, believe it or not, that I wanted to put in a group, and immediately, this is just, you know, out of the blue, just getting up this morning and logging on, getting everything all laid out so, you know, we could have our conversation here today. And that was the result. That's what happened. Just immediately popped up that, no, you are banned and prohibited. You're in Facebook jail here for the next week. No more posting in groups until November 11th. But any last closing remarks? I think we've tried this once already, but just to be sure and clear here, Abducted, of course, once again, name of the book, folks, is only $10, which I think is a heck of a deal. Of course, you'll be able to get more of the particulars there and more specifics as far as the how things actually, you know, as they can best recall the event occurring. Chad Alta, one more opportunity here, just as we take things home, thoughts on the show or anything else that you'd like to get out there, let people know?
Yeah, just thank you so much for having us and, you know, sharing our experience. And you can find us on Facebook or Abducted in the French Quarter, and contact me there for a copy. And
we love questions, and we love for people to share.
Yeah,
with us as well. So, right. Again, thank you so much for having us.
Our pleasure. It's folks like you that really make our show what it is. So great to see Pirate Joe finally waking up out there, Long Island, New York. So Mondo Payne missed it. Well, that's you'll be able to listen to it, the replay here, I guess, in just a few minutes, Joe, as we wrap things up. We do have the two Pirate Joes on board today, which is great to see. Of course, as always, they do make quite a great little combination there. Faceless Troll, as well as a handful of others, around seven or so people all together. Tyranny Unmasked, East Texas UFOs. So yeah, hopefully a few more questions in the after show. People have been quite active in the comment section. Nothing to ask in particular. I think they've just been so probably entranced and captivated that they just have no idea what to say, frankly. So we're going to wrap things up here now, folks. Let's not forget, and we'll maybe get you to mute yourselves as we do this, too. Just stand by. I'll let you know when things are good to go here on this end. The November schedule that we've got coming up, the World Minds Indie Music Showcase. So that's all done through minds.com, of course, and all we're looking for is quality independent music. Number two is that you have a Minds profile, and thirdly, that the content that you're sharing with us and hoping to have a showcase is copyright and royalty free. We've been dinged and demonetized a couple of times, too many to count now, it seems. Via YouTube, they've really been cranking that end of their agenda up as of late, cheap bastards. You know, so hoping to make the most of that. Come next week is what we're looking at there on schedule-wise, folks. So if you do have any songs or musician friends that you know of that would like to get their last-minute submissions in, do reach out and try to contact us here via the Pirate Radio podcast show on WPRPN.com. You can find us on Facebook, of course, as always, Minds.com, what have you. 40 in Talks is coming up in the third week. He's a well-known and interesting, another colorful Minds.com personality. And then finally, the JFK Roundtable. You're not going to believe this, people. We've managed, it seems, to set things up. We don't often go looking for these well-known luminaries, although if they come knocking, it's not like we're going to turn them away or tell them to get lost. So the way things are looking for the JFK Roundtable here this year is that it's going to be good. We got some pretty major figures and heavy hitters in the area of JFK conspiracy and otherwise paranormal, or I guess more parapolitical studies. So don't forget, if you do have enjoyed today's presentation or have been digging through the archives there, what we've got to offer via our Podomatic.com profile, to lend a hand there on Patreon. It's only a dollar per item of premium content is the minimum that you can reach out, basically, and you can pledge, I guess is the word that I'm looking for, really. So, and half of that, 50 cents of that, goes to charity. So, folks, on that note, with an eye on the heavens and ear to the ground, until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I am your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Aye now, thar we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. This week, we're sending a big and hearty shout-out to our most recent Robin Hood patron, Missouri-based podcast promoter and Lost Arts radio producer, Emily Anderson. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach. Basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!